Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo and it's a pleasure to welcome to VI Talk for the first time Ken Brandt, who is all the way over in Australia and is an author. Hi Ken.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself first before we move on to your writing? Do you want to tell us a little bit about your visual impairment?
Sure. I've had a lot of variation in my vision throughout my entire life. I'm now 65. I was born premature, so the rods and cones of my eyes did not fully develop. For large chunks of my life, I was legally blind, but I've had a roller coaster situation where my vision has gotten better and worse and better and worse. I've had a detached retina in each eye. I've had a cataract in each eye, and I've had two other eye operations. So right now I'm at 6/24 in my good eye and 6/48 in my other eye. So I've gone up and down between that and legally blind for big periods of time. So I've had the unique experience of like seeing worse, seeing better. You know, still seeing worse than most of the sighted friends I know, but seeing better than people who are, you know, really completely blind. So I've had an interesting mix there.
Yeah, that's quite unique, isn't it? I would imagine that not many people experience those sort of dips and highs of vision.
I would say that I'm very, very, it makes you super grateful for the vision you have. You know, my vision is, you know, compared to most people, not so hot. Compared to many in your audience, it might be spectacularly good, but I'm very, very grateful for it. You know, thanks to medical science and doctors, it's really wonderful to have good the vision I have.
Yeah. So you are a writer. You've written a book. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My book, which just came out, is called Positive Vision: Enjoying the Adventures and Advantages of Poor Eyesight. So it's basically an adventure book with the angle that most of the adventures that I included in here, or all the adventures that I included in the book, have some low vision angle, you know, why they were more exciting because I had low vision. Spread out a little bit amongst the many adventure stories are just anecdotes about things. And that's the book. It's an adventure anecdote memoir.
So I looked on your website and from the blurb and things that I saw about the book, it looks like you've had quite an interesting life there.
Well, thank you very much. I like that thing. So I've done some fun things that made it into the book. I was a captain of my university parachuting team. I've spent time exploring in caves and caverns, and I've spent time as a cowboy in Montana, which is in the western U.S. So I've had some big ups and downs of different things, and it's been fun. I spent most of my life really not doing adventures, but being an information technology consultant and then an information security consultant. And most of that time, I never wanted to talk about my vision or even discuss it with people because I thought it would be bad for my career and job opportunities. And I didn't want anybody feeling bad for me. So I just sort of did as well as I could without discussing it. Well, discussing it as little as possible. But now I'm retired, and I thought, you know, I have a bunch of stories. Why don't I just put them in a book, and I don't care about my career anymore.
Good plan. So do you want to tell us a little bit, without giving too much away, obviously, because you want people to read the book, but I'm quite intrigued about you being a cowboy in Montana. That sounds really interesting.
Sure. Well, And it was really interesting. It was when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a cowboy. And then I grew up and I got a chance to do it for a little while. So one of the great things about riding horses is that the horse is actually looking, unlike a car, you know, which is, you know, a horse is actually paying attention to where he's going or she is going. And so you've got that little extra edge as a rider. So what happens with being a cowboy is it turns out there's a little rule of thumb or joke or whatever amongst cowboys in Montana, which includes women, cowboys, cowgirls, but generally everybody's called a cowboy. So if you fall off your horse three times, then you're actually, you then can possibly be a cowboy. So I had four times, but I'll tell you about three times. Two were the same. One was we were herding cattle, which is just as much fun as you can imagine. It's dusty, you're in these wide open places, you're following the herd. And then what happens is one by one, every single cow in the herd decides, well, it would be good to go back and have a little something to eat, a little bite of the grass that I last had where we were before. So one by one, they turn around and start walking or jogging in the opposite direction of how you want them to go. So what you do is you gallop beside the cow until you're like half an inch in front, and then you cut very sharply on your horse to turn them back towards the herd, and you gallop with them until they're back in the herd. And you have to do this over and over and over and over again, because that's their natural instinct, is to go back to the same place. Well, it turns out it's very important to make sure your saddle is as tight as it needs to be, that it's called cinched. So it's just tight as it needs to be. And most of the time I was pretty good at that, but twice I did not have my saddle cinched as well as I could be. So you do that little turn and then your saddle flips and you go way, way, and you fall off your horse while you're turning. And, you know, the whole thing is a mess. So I did that twice, but the third time was way more exciting. So we're done with the cattle herding for the day. And I was with two of my cousins and one other person. So my cousin and I were the youngest by far, and my other cousin and the other person were older. So they said, oh, we're going to go to the bar and have some beers. You guys take the horses back. So my cousin and I are each given one horse to take back in addition to our horse. So then we go a little ways. Then my cousin says, oh, well, I've got to do something too. So she goes off in another direction. So there I am by myself. And I thought, all right, I like galloping much more than walking the horse. It's much more fun. So I'll gallop. But I never tried it with two horses. So in my left hand, I have the reins of the horse I'm leading. And in my right hand, I have my horse's reins. So I get my horse galloping. But in my left hand, the other horse doesn't start as fast because, you know, he's following. So I'm stretched way, way back with my left hand, and I'm going along and I'm having a great time. And it seems really fun until I notice that my saddle is slipping a little bit. And then I realize I don't have enough leverage on my right hand to rein in my own horse because I'm leaning so far back. And so the saddle is just slowly slipping. And I'm thinking, all right, now I've been told, never, ever let go of the reins. Never do that. You never do that. So, all right, don't let go of the reins. So I let go a little in the sense that I was taking my right reins, throwing them up in the air and catching them a little bit closer. And I was getting closer and closer to the point where I would be able to rein in my own horse. In the meantime, I'm still leaning way, way back because the other horse is not as fast. So I'm going along and I almost have it, to the point where I can rein in my horse and the saddle slips off. So then I still hold on to the reins and I'm being dragged along this dirt, rocky road by two horses. Very luckily, I did not get like trampled or anything. And we went along for a while, but after a while they stopped because of course it's uncomfortable to be dragging me by the reins. So I was pretty happy that I only had some bruises, and that was about it. But it was exciting. It was fun being a cowboy.
It sounds like it. How long did you do that for?
Maybe several months. So wow. I did it while one part of one summer and a part of a vacation after I started working after university.
Yeah, great. And I noticed when you said before you touched on sort of exploring caverns and things, but on your website it says fiery caverns. That sounds a little more dangerous than just exploring a cavern.
Yeah. Well, what happened was two of my really good friends that I've been friends with for decades and I, we went to a caves in near Albany, New York. And these were not tourist caves where you could just there were lights or guides or anything like that. These were really interesting, unmarked caves with you're crawling around on mud and dirt, and there were streams and some little lakes, and there were waterfalls, and you would be climbing up crevices and little passageways. Some of the passageways were so small you'd have to decide before you went in, do you want one arm in front of you or behind you or two arms in front of you, because there wouldn't be enough room to switch. It was really dark. It was unbelievably dark, and it was really beautiful in some parts. So anyway, we're in the middle of this cave, and it was the first time my friend Paul had done this. So my other friend John had done it a whole bunch of times, and I'd done it a medium amount of times. So when you're in a cave, you're wearing a hard hat with a light on the front. And the lights we had were calcium carbide lights, where there were two parts to the light. There was a chamber on the top that was full of calcium. Chamber on the top that was full of water. Chamber on the bottom that was full of calcium carbide. So the water would very slowly drip onto the calcium carbide, form a gas, and that would be, you'd light the gas, and that flame was how you would see what was going on. So the whole thing was even more exciting because you're doing it with a flame on your head. So anyway, we're doing that, but I needed to fill up my water. So the two of them faced me so that I could use their light while I took my helmet off, unscrew the top, and I'm starting to fill it up with water. Then all of a sudden, what happened was Paul leaned in to get a better look because he hadn't really watched this process before. And he accidentally sets my head on fire. So the first I know about it, and it was apparently very, very dramatic because it's literally pitch dark inside the cave, and like my head's on fire. So the first I know about it is my two friends start yelling and beating my head to get the flames out, which they succeeded in doing, but I didn't know what was going on at the time. And I said, stop, they're yelling fire, fire. So I had the canteen open. So I just poured that on my head. And luckily, the whole thing was so fast that I only had like slightly singed hair, which was not noticeable, by the time we got out. And luckily there was so much mud that my head was a little bit wet anyway. So Paul apologized for setting me on fire. I thanked both of them for basically saving my life. And then we continued caving. It was fun.
It sounds terrifying.
Well, it was too fast to be terrifying.
Yeah, I guess so. So did most of the adventures that are featured in the book, did most of them happen in your younger years, or are you still adventuring now?
Well, I'd have to say most happened when I was younger, but that's one of the things that the book made me realize. I need to get into many more adventures. So when the pandemic is over, my wife and I plan on basically traveling all over the place and giving book talks and stuff, and just seeing what adventures we can get into. We'll go all over the, you know, we'll go to the UK, we'll go to Europe, we'll go to Canada, we'll go to US, we'll go to New Zealand, we'll go to Australia. We've been to many places in all of the places I just mentioned, but we want to go to a lot more.
Amazing. That sounds great. Have you got any aspirations of what you would like to do, or are you just going to kind of go with the flow?
Yeah, just go with the flow, see what happens. And hopefully, you know, as I'm sure everybody in the whole world is hoping, you know, that, you know, whenever the post-pandemic time comes, you know, we hope it comes soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And how are you coping with that? What's life like for you over in Australia?
Well, we were generally better off than most of the world. Until the state that my wife and I live in Melbourne, which our state is Victoria, and we had a big outbreak. And I don't know the numbers compared to the UK, but compared to the US, we were, for a brief amount of time, about 2 months ago, we were worse than every single state in the US. So Australia did a great job, and Melbourne and Victoria did a great job of clamping down and really saying, all right, you know, you've got to wear a mask. You can't go more than 5 kilometers from your house. You can only go anywhere for, you know, business or to help somebody else or educate, you know, and all kinds of stuff was closed. It has worked tremendously. We're now down to something like 20 new cases per day, and it's going lower. So I'm very happy to be in a place that, you know, as soon as something needed to be done, they really took it seriously.
Yeah, that's good. We wish you all the best with that, as we do with everybody, really. And hopefully, we'll all come out of this.
Well, and the other thing is that you hate to say anything is good about a pandemic, but if you're writing a book, so I was still writing when this started, and then if you're spending time, you know, trying to do things like this, publicizing and interviewing and stuff, you know, a lot of that's pretty much heads down solitary activity, which is coincidentally a great activity during a pandemic.
You're right. It is, absolutely. So what would you say to anybody who was thinking about, you know, writing a book, someone perhaps who's visually impaired and who's perhaps considered it? What would be your top tips or your advice?
Well, I would do a couple of things. One thing is once you have your draft done, and you're really, really happy with it, then show it to 10 friends. And you'll be really, really pleasantly surprised at the generosity of time they spend and the great tips and suggestions that they provide. Some people will turn out to be really good at, now move this chapter here, move this stuff from here to here. Other people are going to turn out to be really great copy editors. And it's all so valuable because you look at your own book and you edit it and you read it and you edit and you read it and you're so used to it, you miss all kinds of basic stuff. You know, you told the same story in 2 chapters. You have the same word printed 3 times. You're so used to thinking what you wanted to say, it's hard to see what it really says. So showing it to 10 people and then getting their feedback and incorporating it, that helped me so much that I did it again with 10 other people. And that also turned out to be a great idea. The other thing that I'd read about book writing, which I did, was after all of that, and you think you're ready again and done, figure out what 10% of the book is the least important. And even though you love it, even though you love the whole book, cut out that 10%. Just be ruthless. And that turned out to be a good idea too. So after doing all of those things, then I gave it to a professional editor who I absolutely expected to improve it, and she did. You know, I was not at all surprised, but of course I was happy. Mm.
So if anybody wants to read your book, how can they get hold of a copy?
It's available all over the place. Online, you can order it at most major online bookstores. Some have it right away, and the others will probably have it, shortly. It sort of rolls out around the world, so that's floating around.
And is it available in any accessible format? So is it available on Kindle, for example?
Yes, it's available on hardcover, paperback, all forms of ebook, including Kindle. So, Amazon is the Kindle place, and most others use something called EPUB, which, like Barnes and Noble and stuff. And then not right away because I'm still narrating it, but after a while, there's going to be an audiobook as well.
And you're going to narrate that yourself, you said.
Yes,
Yeah, that's great.
it'll be 99% me narrating, but the foreword will be written, I mean, not written, will be narrated by the guy who wrote the foreword. And then at the beginning of each chapter, there's an inspirational quote, and that'll be read by a different person. And then a different person will read, there's a joke at the end of each chapter, so somebody else will read the jokes.
Oh, fabulous. That sounds really entertaining. Sounds really interesting. And that's great that it's accessible for people with a visual impairment,
Yeah.
obviously. So what does the future hold for you? Have you got any more books in the planning, or are you gonna just chill out for a bit after you're busy writing?
Well, I think there's still a lot to go in terms of, the immediate future, in terms of interviews and trying to publicize the book and get book reviews and stuff. I don't have an immediate topic in mind, but somewhere near the end of the book, I do make the point that, if you, the reader, have some interesting vision-related adventures or anecdotes or jokes, use my website and contact me. And if you want to have it in a future book, I'll include it. So, that might work, might not work, I don't know. But if it works, I'll have a whole conglomeration of additional stories from other people that might be a fun book.
That sounds really good. So, do you want to give the details of your website and how people can get in touch with you?
Sure. And it's all the same thing on the website. The website is my name. It's kenbrandt.com, KENBRANDT.com. And there's all kinds of, book blurbs and book reviews and interviews and stuff that are on there. There's also going to be a list in the next couple of days of all the places you can buy it. And then there's also a contact form. So all of that's there. I should mention one thing that's totally, that has not come up yet, but I think is very important to say, is I'm not at all saying that poor vision is better than good vision. I'm saying, do everything you can to protect and help your vision. Stay in shape, eat right, do everything your eye doctor says. If you can wear contacts or wear glasses or have some kind of operation to improve your eyesight, do all of those things. But, after a certain point, if you get to where you've finished all of those things and your vision is as good as it's going to be, even if it's pretty bad, well, just be grateful that you've got that, whatever level of vision you have, and then don't let it stop you. Just go for whatever you want to go for. Just do it. Enjoy the fun of going for it. Enjoy the humor that's involved naturally because you just don't see certain things. But just go for it. I'm not saying poor vision is better than good, but there are some advantages to poor vision.
And you're living your life, aren't you? You're just getting on with it and dealing with that and enjoying the ride, aren't you, as they say?
Exactly.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Ken. Thank you so much for sharing your adventures, or some of them, and good luck with the book and getting it out there. And I look forward to hearing if you write another one.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed our conversation, and hopefully we get to meet in person sometime.
If you come over to the UK, we'll definitely have to do that.
Great. Thank you.